on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to the Tuesday, February 10th, 2026 edition of Invest Talk. My name is Luke Guerrero, and I will be your host over this next hour as we dive into markets, talk about important issues, but most importantly, answer your burning finance and investment questions. Now, those questions come in many forms. They come via voicemail, over on our YouTube channel, Invest Talk with Two T's. But most importantly, my favorite way they are delivered is through your live calls. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down those show topics. But let's tackle this caller question now.
Hey, Justin and Luke. This is James from New York. I have a question about Centene Corp, ticker symbol CNC. I'm wondering what you guys think about the company. Is this a good time to enter or just keep it on my watch list for now? Thank you and have a great day.
Centene Corp, ticker CNC, is a large U.S. healthcare insurer, and they focus on Medicaid, Medicare, and the ACA, Affordable Care Act, marketplaces. In terms of size, it's a fairly large company, about $18.9 billion market cap. And it's had a rough year. Year-to-date, it's down 3.74%. But over the past 52 weeks, it's down 32.76%. Its shares are well off of their highs and has shown a bit of a strong rebound at times on the back of some earnings beats. But frankly, with the exception of a couple positive days in the past couple years, it hasn't really done much. It has been on a consistent slide since the middle of 2022. And more recently, earnings have been mixed. They had some surprise profits at one point that helped lift the stock a little bit, and then some disappointing guidance at another point in time. And, you know, in the past couple of years, they also have at least one time, I think it was last year, withdrew their full year forecast, which tends to lead to investors being a bit skittish because you usually do that when either businesses are dramatically changing or the overarching environment doesn't allow you to project as well. And so that's obviously and understandably a bit of a worry for investors. One other issue is that the company's core businesses are highly linked to healthcare utilization and premium subsidy policies, meaning that a flat or declining enrollment and rising medical costs, well, they've started to pressure margins quite a bit. Return on equity for this company is negative 28.9%. That is not a good number. You want that number positive. In fact, it is worse than a lot of its competitors. And so, you know, there are broader issues with U.S. healthcare, and they affect all companies, not equally, but certainly do affect all companies. This one in particular, though, especially because of its major exposure to government-linked programs, it affects asymmetrically, and we certainly see that in the stock price, and we see that in its profits as well. So CNC, no for me. Thanks for the call. We got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have pre-planned for you all. My main focus point concerns this story, the Super Bowl consumer hangover. A record number of viewers tuned in. But did they spend? We'll talk a little bit about the Super Bowl ad lineup, how it's dominated by tech and pharma, and what that tells us about the health of the American consumer. Also, the government talking a lot about data coming up this week in a way that maybe could be softening the blow for inflation coming in a bit hot. So we'll touch on that story. It also is a bit difficult to find a job right now, so we'll give you a brief update on the labor market. And should we have time at the end of the show, we will talk crypto, because it is winter outside and it's certainly winter in crypto markets as well. But this one feels a little bit different. We also have some voice bank calls ready to play, including one on MSC Industrial Direct Company, that is ticker MSM, and another broad question on stock valuation, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel, and hopefully some live calls throughout the show. Well, we're going to do a quick break. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank. If you're listening on AM 1220 or via our live stream, give me a call now at 888-99-CHART. Up next, we'll talk about today's market activity.
When you tell your friends about InvestTalk and they ask you why you listen, let them know there are many reasons, and one is parallel investing from KPP Financial and InvestTalk host Justin Klein. Parallel investing means Justin invests right alongside KPP Financial clients. He makes the same trade for KPP Financial on the same day, at the same price, and the same percentages as KPP clients. There's no front running and no special treatment. In this way, Justin and KPP Financial share the same risks and the same potential for success. Parallel investing aligns the interests of Justin and KPP Financial with those of his clients. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your questions about parallel investing. And you can learn more anytime at investtalk.com. In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART is the number if you want to get through live to me over the next 45 minutes or so. But while we wait for some live calls, let's talk a little bit about the market today. Overall, U.S. stocks pretty mixed, ending a bit off of their worst levels. You have the Dow up 10 basis points, S&P the opposite direction, down 33, NASDAQ down 59, Russell 2000 down 34. In spite of a bit of a mixture leaning towards the downside, breadth was positive. The equal weight S&P and the Dow Jones both set record closes, the equal weight outpacing that cap weighted index by 70 basis points on the day. Diving a little bit underneath the surface, we see big tech was mostly lower amidst a bit of a broad AI infrastructure slowdown that caused that space to lag the rest of the market. Other underperformers included banks, IBs, financial services, exchanges, and biotech. Outperformers included home builders, building products, housing-related retail, media, chemicals, and utilities. On the bond side, Treasury's a bit firmer. We did see some curve flattening with yields down about 7 basis points towards that long end of the curve. Dollar index, flat. Gold finished down 1%. Silver settled down 2.3%. And crude oil was down 60 basis points. All in all, stocks really unable to hold on to the earlier gains in as much of a market tilting towards defensive day as we've seen. We saw rates rally a bit amidst the White House effort to talk down Wednesday's NFP number, soft December retail sales, and of course, the latest geopolitical concerns with some of the comments that we saw out of the Trump administration regarding Iran. And then you saw a bit of a rotation in a way. You saw financial advisory brokerages, the latest group hit by AI competition concerns. But at the same time, software continuing to claw back some of its recent losses. Digging in a bit to the data side of things, we did have retail sales numbers flat month over month against consensus for a 40 basis point rise. The report showed sales down for furniture stores, apparel, and miscellaneous retailers, while building material sales still pretty strong. We also got December import prices up 10 basis points month over month, and export prices losing about 30 basis points. NFIB Small Business Optimism Index unexpectedly ticking down for January as well. So overall, not a strong day for economic data. Initial claims in January existing home sales will be out on Thursday, and Friday will bring us January CPI. Core CPI seen up 30 basis points month over month and 2.5% year over year. Swing back to the InvestTalk YouTube comment section question bank for a relatively fresh comment from our friend Caleb Turner on ticker HOOD. It says, what are your thoughts on Robinhood Markets? I've been holding for a year now, and it has recently dropped significantly. Thank you. Well, Robinhood, of course, a favorite amongst retail traders. They certainly get a lot of retail trading volume. It's a pretty big company, $79.641 billion market cap, the fintech broker, offering clients commission-free trading in both stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptocurrency. Now, they recently reported Q4 2025 results that showed revenue growth but missed expectations and a decline in key metrics like monthly active users. So that triggered a bit of a sell-off recently, down 1.11% today. Year-to-date, down 24.31%. For the past 3 months, down 37%. Let's take a look at it after hours. After hours, down another 7.52%. So this question was on the 8th, and it has been downward ever since then as well. Now, one of the big reasons for this steep decline is because of falling cryptocurrency trading revenue. Now, even when crypto, even when Bitcoin was doing really well, up above 100,000, a more educated observer may see not just the price action, but the volume, not even close to what it was in its peak in 2020 and 2021 during the pandemic. And volumes have been steadily falling within the crypto space, especially crypto specifically. And so that's pressured this stock. It's led to this market slide over the past several months. And so with broader crypto weakness tending to correlate with weaker trading volumes, it understandably hurts revenue. I mean, revenue growth going back to 2020 was 60% on an annualized basis, and that's not sustainable. We all know that. But 24 to 25, it grew from 2.9 billion to 4.4. It's supposed to grow 4.4 to 5.6 into this upcoming year. Now, one of the benefits about these types of companies is, well, they tend to operate on solid margins. And certainly this is as well, net margin projected to be about 41.3%. But crypto is not the only area where you're seeing weakness. You're seeing options trading weakness. You're seeing stock trading weakness as well within that space. And so overall, you're seeing a company that had been growing significantly quickly slow down to the point where he had still trading at 33.2 times price to forward-looking earnings. I mean, this is a pretty easy one to me. If trading volume continues to fall, specifically cryptocurrency volume, Robinhood's not going to do well. And so you're seeing a pareback of expectations, a bit of a healthy correction here, but I'm not convinced that there isn't more downside to come. That is Robinhood Markets, ticker HOOD. Looks like we got plenty of time, so let's answer another question now.
I have a question about stock valuation, particularly regarding the P/E ratio. Are there simple rules or formulas that you guys use both with the P/E ratio along with one or two other metrics? For instance, I was wondering if consistent 10% earnings growth could justify a P/E ratio of 10. I know this is oversimplistic, but I'm curious if you have any guidelines to initially assess a stock before diving into a more detailed analysis. I would appreciate any advice you could give. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, not all P/E ratios are made the same. We talk about that all the time. You have to look at it on a comparative basis. How does it compare to where it's been historically? How does it compare to other companies within that industry? But at its core, multiples are telling you something. High multiples can intrinsically give you the type of sales revenue, price to sales, the amount of sales growth that is expected to happen to justify those prices. And so when you look at something that is trading at 60, 70 times price to forward-looking earnings, you have to say to yourself, is this feasible that you're supposed to project for the next 5 years, 25, 30% growth over time? Either way, when you're talking about valuation, there's a lot that goes on there, right? Because when valuation at its core is trying to discount future cash flows, and there's more that goes into that than just what is going on with the company internally. So all of these multiples are not the be-all, end-all of analyzing stock valuation, but from a comparative perspective, they can at least give you a little guidance on where to start your thinking at how much a company is worth. Thanks for the call. We're headed into a break. Still to come, my main focus point about the Super Bowl consumer hangover and more answers to your finance and investment questions. So stay with me. This is Invest Talk.
Guerrero is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
The Super Bowl is not just a championship game. It is, in fact, one of the most powerful consumer spending events of the year. So as kickoff approached, household spending started to snap into these predictable patterns tied to game day rituals. Looking across the last three Super Bowls, spending consistently surges in the days leading up to the game and holds through Sunday. And three categories tend to dominate: television, groceries, and team merchandise. TV spending has jumped roughly 33% during Super Bowl season, reflecting how central the at-home viewing experience has become. Bigger screens, they clearly win, with 70-inch and larger TVs driving the bulk of incremental sales. In fact, from February 1st through the Super Bowl Sunday, large screen TV sales have averaged nearly 60% above normal levels. The surge has been pretty consistent year after year, especially sharp gains in the days immediately before kickoff. And Super Bowl Saturday, the day before, stands out as a more of a peak moment, with TV sales jumping sharply as procrastinators, if you will, lock in those last-minute upgrades. Online sales for the largest screens have nearly doubled on the eve of the game in some years. And grocery spending tells a similar story as well, but with even more dramatic spikes. Chicken wings are the undisputed MVP of the Super Bowl, with sales surging nearly 180% over Super Bowl weekend in one recent season. The real grocery rush happens before game day, not really during it. Super Bowl Eve consistently ranks as the biggest grocery shopping day in the stretch leading up to the game. Total grocery spending has jumped about 25%. Versus a typical January Saturday. Snack staples dominate carts, with chips, dips, soft drinks, and dressings all seeing outsized gains. Now this year, overall grocery spending rose over 10% versus previous years. And team merchandise as well. That's where emotion starts to turn into explosive demand. And so before we even get to the Super Bowl, we already are in a mood to spend, spend, spend. And the Super Bowl itself can tell us a little bit about, well, where are consumers looking to spend into the future? Look at the ads that happened during the Super Bowl. Historic levels of pharmaceutical products being pushed, GLP-1s being pushed, AI models being pushed, sports gambling being pushed. And these are key areas where we have seen a lot of consumers start to spend more and more money month after month, year after year. And so we as investors understand that for these companies to shell out the reported $8 million per ad, they have to believe or at least see data that suggests real ROI. And so what does this mean for us? What can we glean from this information? What it tells us, and what we've seen even leading up to the Super Bowl, is the amount of money people have spent, not just on pharmaceuticals while medical expenses are increasing, but on GLP-1 specifically, is dramatically increasing. The amount of money that people have spent on a lot of these AI tools is dramatically increasing. The Super Bowl is, more than anything, an indicator of what Americans and what consumers would like to buy. And so, with the record amount of spending from tech companies and pharmaceutical companies, a lot can be gleaned about where profits may be in the future. Looks like we got time before the next break, so let's go ahead and play another listener question now.
I had a question about a stock called Tech, T-E-C-H, Biotechna Corporation. It looked interesting to me. I wanted to get your perspective on it. I'm not a big fan of biotechnology, but it seems like it's more of a picks and shovels play on that area. Look forward to hearing the answer. Thank you so much.
Take a look at ticker T-E-C-H. My computer being a little bit slow on my end. Okay, it's Biotechne Corporation. It is a global life sciences company. So they look to provide innovative tools and bioactive reagents for research and the clinical diagnostic community. So it is, in fact, more of a picks and shovels because it is more supplying technology to biotechnology firms in order to do the research. Now, it has been a publicly traded company for quite some time, its first trading date all the way back to 1989. And in that time, it's grown to be a rather middle-of-the-road mid-cap name, $10.24 billion market cap. But over the past couple of years, especially as biotech spending has increased, well, revenue growth has been great, 10.5% on an annual basis. And margins at the same time, well, they've expanded a bit. In fact, over the past 5 years, their high was in 2021 at 36.3% in terms of EBITDA margin. Now they're finally reaching near that at 35.6% in terms of guidance this year. And so, as research and lab spending has surged, this company has seen some benefit from that. But from a technical perspective, it still looks a bit a little weak. It's been ranging for quite some time after a persistent downward trend, and it's still trading at 31.1 times price to forward-looking earnings. So for now, on TECH, gonna have to pass. On the next Invest Talk, we'll dig into this story, the Valentine's Financial Audit. Love is in the air, but what about in your bank accounts? That's tomorrow, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero and ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHARM.
There are a few things that make KPP Financial special. One of them is parallel investing. This means they invest right alongside their clients. Here's how it works. When KPP Financial makes a trade for their clients, Justin Klein makes the same trade for himself and KPP. On the same day, at the same price, and same percentage. No front running, no special treatment. Learn more about parallel investing at investtalk.com.
Hi, Justin and Luke. This is Kevin calling from Southern California. I have a question about MSM. I think it's a good company, and I'm wondering what you see. Wondering if you think it's a good buy at these current levels. Looking forward to hearing your insights. Thank you.
MSM is MSC Industrial Direct Company. Let's pull it up here on my screen right now. It's had a good year, up 12.24% year to date, up 6.85% over the past 3 months, up 17.17% over the past 52 weeks. It's on the larger end of the small cap universe. $5.3 billion is where it is currently sitting. And what it does is it's an industrial distributor. It's a distributor of metalworking and a distributor of maintenance stuff, repair and operations, products and services. So it has a pretty broad portfolio. Think cutting tools, abrasives, fasteners, as well as machinery components. So why has it done pretty well year to date, especially relative to its industry in 2025, where it outperformed by 3.6%. Well, revenue growth is really not that great. I mean, they reached a high in 2023, and it's been downhill ever since then. And margins have been compressing as well. But the reality is price appreciation is not just about what you're doing, but about what you're doing relative to what people think you're doing. Earnings surprises are a real thing, And recently, quarterly results, they showed sales growth, they showed earnings in line or slightly above expectations, and that has certainly helped the stock as well. You're also seeing industrial and manufacturing spending, stronger capital expenditures, as well as stronger maintenance budgets among consumers and customers. And so that has helped the business as well, in spite of slower industrial activity, which can weigh on demand for MRO's products. Now it's trading near the high end of its range, 20.8 times price to forward-looking earnings. And its ROE is solid, right? 14.8%. That is higher than most of its competitors. But in spite of what's been going on in the past 52 weeks, I mean, it's been trading pretty flat. Now, at the same time, it is a juicy dividend name that does give you decent industrial exposure. About 3.7% dividend yield is where it sits right now. It's been about 3 to 4% over the past couple of years. So, I mean, in terms of where it has been going relative to expectations, it's had solid performance. It had solid unexpected growth recently. But to me, it just does not justify these multiples. That is MSC Industrial Direct, ticker MSM. Thanks for the call. Looks like we got another listener question, and this time from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And this one's about ticker VICI. It says, I've been playing around with several AI programs, Perplexity, Claude, Copilot, ChatGPT. I'm sometimes surprised with the different answers. I get going from one to another, one seemingly constant recently when I run a screen for great long-term value stocks is ROP keeps coming up. Sorry, it's a little difficult to read. They acquire high-end software, and most of the AI says they're taking advantage of AI instead of being threatened by it. It's currently getting killed by the AI threat, but all the AI programs say it's overblown. I've picked up some, but I'm tempted to add quite a little bit. VICI was another one constantly coming up as undervalued and a long-term keeper. Let's talk about VICI, because that's actually a name that we recently held for clients, and that is Vici Properties, Inc. So it is a real estate investment trust. It owns and operates and develops gaming and hospitality entertainment names. Now, we held this years back. And the reason why we held it years back is because in times where economic power of consumers, especially in an inflationary environment, is not doing too hot, what do people tend to not cut back on? Gambling. And it had a decent return in the time in which we held it. It has a decent dividend yield. 4 to 6% is where it's been. And remember, for REITs, you're looking for diversified real estate exposure. You're looking for a dividend, right? Income as well. But what happened over the past year or so, a couple years actually, that started to make us want to no longer be in this name? Well, from a technical basis, it was flat, relatively flat, a bit better than flat if you consider what its yield was. But from a thematic basis, it doesn't hold water anymore. People no longer have to go to these gambling properties in order to gamble. You can bet on anything. Anything at all. Well, not anything at all, but most things. When we are using things like Kalshi and Polymarket and Robinhood and all these companies that have these quote-unquote futures contracts that allow you to do sports gambling. And so the arena of gambling has changed. And so what used to be attractive, gambling REITs, to me, not so much anymore. So for that reason, Vici Properties, gonna have to pass. Looks like we got plenty of time. Let's listen to another voicemail now.
Yes, I was wondering if you could give me your opinion on two ETFs, Japan EWJV and South Korea FLKR. I was wondering if you would recommend both of them long-term. Thank you. Bye-bye.
EWJV. Okay, missed a letter there. EWJV. So EWJV is the multi-factor selected take on the large and mid-cap market of Japanese stocks. It is an iShares fund. And usually when you're taking a look at international exposure, you tend to see a bit of a higher expense ratio. Now, when you're going from US to international to emerging markets, that when it's when it tends to get the most expensive. So I would expect, without even looking, that this to be maybe in the 10 to 25 basis point range. It is in fact 15 basis points. It's a $665 million market cap fund. It tilts a bit more towards the large cap space than the overall Japanese market does. About 90.29% of this fund is in the large cap space, whereas only 71.87% of the overall market fits within that category. So it does over tilt large caps. Now it is fairly concentrated, but really not too much. The top 10 only makes about 40.7% of this index. And it's companies that you probably know, Mitsubishi, Toyota, Takeda Pharmaceutical, some of the largest US, Japanese companies, Sony Group Corporation. Overall, it seems to me, especially, you know, it probably did really well today. The Japanese market, of course, doing very well today on the back of the election results that we saw out of Japan. We have said for quite some time, international exposure, especially in an environment where people are starting to move away from US dollar denominated assets, is a good thing. And the Japanese market certainly can be a good area for growth. So if you're looking to get a value exposure across the board, EWJV is a solid way to go. Thanks for the call. Let's go with another listener voicemail question now.
Hi, I was calling about the Franklin FTSE Mexico ETF, ticker symbol FLMX at Foxtrot Lima Mike X-Ray. I was calling just to see what y'all thought of the fund, if it was a good play on Mexico. I'm kind of targeting Mexico and India as my two emerging market funds to diversify with internationally. I was just calling to see what you guys thought about it and if you guys thought it was a good ETF to invest in. Thanks a lot for everything you guys do. I love the show. Take care.
Let's take a look at FLMX, the Franklin FTSE FTSE Mexico ETF. Well, it's pretty straightforward. It invests in large and mid-cap Mexican equities, and it's pretty representative of the space, I would say. One thing, though, is not only does it primarily invest in large and small and mid-caps, it only invests in them. So it actually excludes small caps and excludes certain RIC-compliant companies, or rather excludes certain companies to remain RIC-compliant as well. Now, over the past 3 months, it's up 22%, year-to-date up 17.06%, up 66.58% in the past year. And much like the Japanese ETF, it's doing this with very low expense ratio, 19 basis points. You're getting exposure that is roughly in line with what the overall market is, about 70% large, about 26% mid, and then maybe the upper end of that small cap range, but still underweight what you see in the overall market. Now, Justin and I have been talking about diversifying for quite some time. For us, Mexico and India, both great areas to look for diversification. And another example, given the return profile, the benefits of looking outside the United States for allocation in your portfolio. Thanks for the call. Well, you know, the way the administration has been talking, a lot of people are starting to brace for potentially uncomfortable January inflation report, even as consensus forecasts are pointing to a fairly tame monthly increase. I said at the top of the show, economists expect consumer prices to rise by about 30 basis points in January, which would ease the annual inflation rate down to roughly 2.5%. The concern is that January has recently produced hotter than expected inflation readings. And it's caught markets off guard. In both 2023 and 2024, January posted one of the strongest monthly CPI increases of the year, reinforcing that anxiety. If inflation does come in hot again, many would interpret it as evidence that companies are finally passing Trump-era tariffs more on to consumers. Some Federal Reserve officials have already cited that risk as a reason to move cautiously on further interest rate cuts. And at the same time, January inflation, it's notoriously tricky to interpret because you see this seasonal pricing behavior that you don't see in other months. Businesses often reset prices at the start of the year, from gym memberships to streaming services to post-holiday retail pricing. And so while CPI is seasonally adjusted to remove these patterns, some argue that residual seasonality, well, it still leaks through. There's been research on it. Research from the Boston Fed suggests January inflation has historically run slightly hotter than other months, a small difference that can still move markets. Recent Adobe data showing broad-based online price increases, especially in import-heavy goods, that adds to the upside risk narrative. Still, there are competing forces here. Softer consumer demand and visible price cuts from major brands, they suggest that even a January spike may prove temporary, rather than a start of a new inflation surge. More than anything, this is evidence that you cannot take any single month's data and extrapolate forward. Looks like we still got time. See if we can answer one more listener question.
This is Dan from Walnut Creek, and I had a question about A.O. Smith Corporation, stock symbol AOS, and I just wanted to get you guys' opinion on it. I've got a very small position, and I've been looking for an opportunity to purchase some more, and I was wondering if this is a good time to do that. Thanks very much. Bye.
Let's take a look at ticker AOS. I think this is one that we get a fair amount of calls about. It is indeed A.O. Smith Corp. It is a publicly traded industrial company. What they do is they manufacture and market residential and commercial water heaters, as well as boilers, water treatment systems, and other related products, not just to the U.S., but internationally as well. A.O. Smith has been doing real well year to date, 20.32%, up 22% over the past 52 weeks. And that's on the back of some antithetical performance, I would say. In 2024 and 2025, they underperformed their industry by 23% in 2024. But since then, revenue has picked up again. It started on a downward trend in 2023, but now they're projected to grow from $3.8 billion in 2025 to $3.9 billion in 2026, while albeit margins on the bottom line, earnings per share, may fall a bit. But EBITDA margin projected to expand from 20.8% in 2024 to 21.5% in 2026. Now, from a valuation perspective, they're trading at about their average. And the return on equity, though, this is probably the biggest part of it, 29.2%. That is nearly 10% better than all of its major competitors. Recently, they've earned earnings and profit beats, and so surpassing expectations again, even with revenue being flat, that's going to be beneficial to a company's price. One other thing that they have, a bit of stability in their dividend. You go back 6 years, it's been between 1% and 2% consistently year after year. And so you see this. You see growth starting to pick up again. You see, from a technical perspective, momentum turning in a positive direction for the first time since the beginning of 2024. You see revenue starting to pick up again. You see margins starting to expand a little bit. And it fitting in really with a secular growth theme within the industrial space. At these prices, for a solid dividend payer, I like the name. That's A.O. Smith Corporation, ticker AOS. Well, this is InvestTalk. I'm Lou Guerrero. We have one goal here, one mission, to help you achieve your financial freedom. And we do that each and every day by answering your finance and investment questions. And so, if you want to get yours in before the end of this show, give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Luke. Could you please give your opinion on the following stocks? PSE, Vistra Corp, and PEG, Constellation Energy. Thanks for sharing your thoughts. Bye.
VST is an integrated electrical utility and power generation company. So it sells electricity, it sells natural gas, and it does it to residential customers, commercial customers, as well as industrial customers. In fact, it owns a pretty large generation portfolio, including fossil fuels, nuclear, solar, and battery assets. Now, recently, shares have outperformed many of its peers. It's had a strong year with strong total returns because investors have rotated into energy infrastructure name on rising power demand. So you've had this energy demand growth. It has a diversified generation portfolio that has helped it. And overall, It has had solid investor interest and analyst upgrades. CEG is a major independent power producer, so it focuses heavily on nuclear, heavily on clean electricity generation. It actually has one of the largest nuclear fleets in the U.S. and sells energy and related services in multiple regional markets. It's had strong returns as well. And that's because nuclear and clean energy for the past couple years has been a big narrative here, not just the attempted electric transition, but because at a time when AI data centers have been massively demanding energy, massively, nuclear has been at the forefront of this conversation. And so as energy demand will continue to increase along with AI, along with expanding populations, not just in size, but in breadth of where they are, both of these companies can be interesting parts of your portfolio. They do a bit different things. I would say Vistra has a bit broader diversification, but either way, I like both these names. Thanks for the call. Now, before we head off, let's talk a little bit about hiring in the US, because it has slowed pretty sharply. And economists say the reasons are numerous rather than singular. Trade uncertainty, tariffs, they've made it harder for companies to plan ahead, causing many to pause hiring decisions. High short-term interest rates are squeezing smaller firms in particular, especially those reliant on credit card borrowing. At the same time, tech companies, well, they're still digesting the excess hiring they did during the post-pandemic boom. One of the biggest shifts is that workers are no longer quitting their jobs at the same pace as a few years ago. The quits rate has fallen well below pre-pandemic levels, and it's reduced the need for replacement hiring. As a result, overall hiring rates are now unusually low for an economy with unemployment still near 4.4%. And this disconnect would reflect a pretty fragile equilibrium, where employers are reluctant to add workers, but also hesitant to lay them off. Job growth has slowed to its weakest pace outside a recession since the early 2000s, with revisions likely to lower recent totals further. Consumer surveys, well, they show a bit of growing pessimism. Americans are expecting unemployment to rise, and fewer believe new jobs are easy to find. Immigration restrictions and an aging population have further reduced both the supply of workers as well as the demand for new hiring. And so while AI may be affecting some roles at the margins, frankly, the overall shift is more because of the reasons we mentioned: demographics, immigration, overhiring, at least for now, than anything else. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another episode of Invest Talk. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. As always, you can get them at iTunes. You can get them at Spotify. But while you're over there, please be sure to leave us a rate and review. That really does help us out. And if you love this show as much as we love doing it, please tell at least one friend and one family member to join the team. One thing we've been highlighting recently is KPP Financial. We practice parallel investing, where we trade our clients' money alongside our own. We get the same day, same price, same percentages, no front running, no special treatment. Most people, most advisors, they don't do that. They don't put their own skin in the game. At KPP Financial, we walk the walk. If that sounds interesting, head over to investtalk.com and click the portfolio review button. It is a free and confidential service. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.